Into the Weird, episode 37, Monster Party.
Welcome to Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Billy D, and alongside me is my co-host, Howlin' Herman Lowe. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Mr. B. No, I can't complain. I'm sitting here in Transylvania, you know, having a Bloody Mary with our favorite Count, Vlad. Mm-hmm. And the Frankenstein monster's howling somewhere down in the cellar, so it's pretty good. So far, my neck's been left alone by these hot babes who are hanging around in these rooms that I've been told not to go into. And I'm shaving without a mirror, so it's going great. So, Mr. Yeah. B, what about you? How has your October been shaping up so far?
Pretty good. You know, haven't had to fight off any werewolves or vampires or anything like that yet. So it's been going good. A little like we discussed off mic, a little behind with, you know, trying to do some movie watching, but I'll catch up. I'll catch up this weekend, hopefully.
Yeah. You need some free time to do that. And, you know, when you do sometimes have a holiday, you spend that time with the family traveling a bit. Mm-hmm. So you can't always be expected to meet your 31 days of horror challenge. That's why you and I, we chose to forego that this year, but I'm still trying, you know. And then if I do make it at the end, I'll say I knew I was gonna make it all along. But I've never actually, I mean, I did it once, but that was before it was a thing, at least on Twitter and social media. So for the last 3 years, nope, I haven't made it. But yeah, October's looking pretty good this year. You know, we've got everything here sort of settling down, and you know, so we can start shopping for Halloween-related content, decorating houses again. Taiwan's going to have the street parade, which, you know, the Halloween parade in Taipei, which is quite a big deal. We thought that we wouldn't have that because obviously last year it was canceled because of COVID.
Yeah.
But this year it looks like things are, you know, looking good, and we might have some celebrations. And then plus there's lots of horror content out there now, you know, on Netflix, HBO Go, all of that. So we're you know, enjoying our favorite month of the year. But Mr. B, speaking about Halloween, obviously we've got a Halloween special coming out later this month, but this is one of our regular Into the Weird episodes. This is the episode after our Doctor Strange, one which dropped a couple of weeks ago, where we're going to talk about Halloween-related material in the Marvel Universe, but it's going to be part of the regular numbering of the show. So introduce these two issues to us, because after all, Mr. B, you are the mastermind behind finding them, tracking them down in your long boxes, and now, you know, you pick them. So tell us a bit about why you picked them and the nostalgic angle to it.
Okay, so I love Marvel Monsters. It's, you know, I'm a huge Bronze Age fan, as you are. So, you know, like you said, later this month, we're going to talk about the magazines as well. But for now, we're talking about just the regular color comic. And it's Marvel Team Up 36 and 37, which is, you know, most of the time a Spider-Man vehicle with him teaming up with another hero, or in this case, him Well, I guess he is kind of teaming up with not a hero, but a monster, and then there's another monster. So,
yeah,
it's a lot of good fun here. So, yeah, two issues back to back, a Marvel team up that, you know, one ran into the other one. You know, it was a two part story, and really awesome here. I love the two guest stars.
Yeah, when there's a two part story in Marvel team up or with the Thing over at Marvel 2-in-1, you always get three characters, right? Sort of teaming up, because the one he teamed up with in the previous issue will also feature in the wrap-up storyline in the next. So it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And this time it's, yeah, like you say, Spidey teaming up with two of the Marvel monsters. Now, we already did the Werewolf by Night in our Lost Halloween episode from earlier this year. Remember, Billy, yeah, where we recorded a Halloween episode last year, but, you know, that got lost in the mix, so... Also had some audio issues that I sorted out much later. That's why we released the Lost Halloween when we were halfway to October earlier this year. I think we got away with it too. I think it was only Laurel who said, "Oh, it's only, you know, Into the Weird guys who can get away with this, because we just label it as we're weird and that's it." No explanation needed. But this time around, it's properly Halloween. It's probably October. So we've, you know, picked these, and like I said, we talked about Jack Russell before, the Werewolf by Night. This time around, it's Marvel's other wolf monster character, and that is, of course, John Jameson, the Man-Wolf.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Billy, you and I, we've both got complete runs of Creatures on the Loose, which is one of the titles that he featured in. And then, of course, later on, he would be drawn by George Perez and written by David Anthony Kraft. And it would become sort of a cosmic storyline. So, fantastic evolution of a character. So, we're big Man-Wolf fans. But very much a Spider-Man villain in the vein of Morbius. You know, he first appeared in The Amazing Spider-Man, I think, if I'm not mistaken, number issue 124 or around there sometime.
And the
son of Jonah Jameson. And then the other character, which is featured first, I would say, is, of course, the monster Frankenstein, Marvel's version.
Oh, yeah.
Which is probably one of the most traditional comic, well, traditional versions of the monster, based very closely off of Mary Shelley's original novel. Or wouldn't you agree, Mr. B?
Yeah. That's his background, even in Marvel Comics. It's pretty much mirrors, you know, the Universal film, you know, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, maybe even not so much. I mean, it does have definitely Universal film elements in there, but it's very close, closer to the novel, you know. Because he's intelligent, he's fast, he's speedy, you know, which is different than the Universal monster, you know, which is lurching, struggling to. Well, he does struggle to articulate himself in the novel too, up to a point, and then when he finally learns language, he becomes more loquacious. But you know, I always the Universal monsters is, I always saw that as their own interpretation, which became the pop culture norm for the monster Frankenstein. But actually Mary Shelley's novel is vastly different than what we got on screen with Boris Karloff, but both are great, obviously.
The books unfortunately did take a backseat once movies came out.
Yeah, the same with Dracula. You know, like, if you think about the Bela Lugosi Dracula and even the Hammer Dracula we got with Christopher Lee, it's vastly different. Not vastly, but, you know, it. Of course, it has the initial setup. Jonathan Harker, you know, going to Transylvania to you know, have the Count sign the papers for purchasing property in London, all of that. That's set up well, but, you know, there's many elements that they don't use. Because it's a movie, and they have to sort of cut the story to fit in an hour and a half. But, you know, it became so popular that became known as the actual storyline. So Marvel went back to the very first original iteration of the Frankenstein monster with Mary Shelley in comics. And that's the monster we find in these two comics we're going to be talking about. So specifically, Mr. B, we're going to be discussing Marvel Team-Up, featuring one of our favorite characters and the greatest comic book characters of all time, of course, Spider-Man. That's his ancillary title before Spectacular Spider-Man came around, where he teamed up with people from the Marvel Universe. And this time around, it's Marvel Team-Up number 36 and 37. And that is both from 1975. So, great picks, Mr. B. They're very, very much in a Halloween vein here, as our listeners will come to to understand. But I think most of you might have already read this, being Bronze Age fans yourselves. Some of my favorite comics too. So when you picked them, I was immediately, yeah, got it. I knew exactly where to look in my long boxes for these two brilliant issues.
Yeah.
So Mr. B, you've got the first one. You're going to be giving us the synopsis there. You want to run through the details first on that issue, when it was published, and the creative team?
Yeah, so this one was, like you said, Marvel Team Up. This is issue 36 from August 1975, and it's a 25-cent cover price. And we have Jerry Conway as the author, and then Sal Buscema and Vince Coletta, our buddy there, on art. And then Charlotte Jetter on letters, and Al Wenzel, colorist, and Len Wein, editor.
Great, 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 yeah. And, of course, you can find this in the Essential Marvel Team Up Volume 2 if you don't have the issue, or you can go onto the Marvel app, right, Billy? Or you can just... Yeah.
It's also in that Monster of Frankenstein trade paperback that they put out as well, maybe about 6 or 7 years ago. Maybe, I don't know, when the heck was that? Let me look on the inside cover here.
A while ago already. Yeah, I bought that. Oh, that's a nice thick, that's a collection. That's the entire run. I think it's 16 issues worth of the Frankenstein title, plus, like you say, a couple of extra issues with his guest appearances, right?
And the magazines too. Yeah, 2015 it came out. Yeah, because I didn't realize these two were in there, so I got my single issues out, and then all of a sudden I wanted to cross-reference something that happens in this issue with, you know, continuity, so I looked in there, and then I'm like, oh, crap, these issues were right in the back of here. I didn't even need to get them out.
yeah, that's true. I remember it's like a thick... It's somewhere here on my shelves, but I can't reach them now. But it's like more than 500 pages at least of Frankenstein content, and you don't find that it often. Because with the Dracula, of course, you have to buy 5 or trade paperbacks worth to get the entire story. Same with the Man-Wolf, you probably have to buy 3 or 4. But with, you know, not the Man-Wolf, I mean the Werewolf by Night.
Werewolf by Night.
But with the Frankenstein Monster over at Marvel, you have 1 trade paperback with everything in it, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the Damon Hellstrom. Great. You know, I think the Son of Satan classic trade paperback that came out roughly the same time as the Monster of Frankenstein, that's also one of the best ones, because that collects the entire Bronze Age run of Damon Hellstrom. Mm-hmm. So those two might be things that our listeners might want to get. Yeah, so you're right, Billy. This is a fantastic collection. So if anybody... It's not in print anymore, but you'll still find it on eBay and so forth and in comic stores. It's Marvel's Monster Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. And then later on, of course, it changed its name to the Frankenstein Monster. Do you remember that, Billy?
Yeah. Not ever sure why they did that, but yeah, they did.
Why? I don't understand. Crazy. And of course, it's got the fantastic appearances of Monsters Unleashed, the magazine in there. And they reprint all the covers, which is essential, I think, in a trade paperback collection like this.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I do really enjoy that when they do that as well, because you figure there are some trades out there that they don't do the covers in them, and I'm thinking, what is wrong with you people? Put the cover in the stupid trade. Like, makes me so pisses me off so bad. I just looked at a trade the other night, and I can't remember what it was. Might have been a DC book, and I looked through it, and I'm like, where are the freaking covers? I was so mad.
Yeah, these days they do it with new collections, but in the old collections, you know, from a couple of years back, no, you gotta have to look online for the covers. If you don't have them in the originals, it's frustrating. But
jackasses.
But Mr. B, we're big fans of this series, Monster of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Of course, Mike Ploog did the art in the beginning, and then Gary Friedrich wrote a lot of the issues, and then eventually John Buscema came on the title. Yeah. Oh, it's just some amazing artists, and what a run. And very
incredible
brutal
stuff.
Yeah, very brutal. It's almost similar to the magazine. Not a lot of blood. Yeah, but there's hints of it, of course, but there's lots of murder, death. It's really a horror title through and through.
A lot of killings,
And a lot of animal mutilation, which we'll also see in these two issues, unfortunately. But these animals deserve it, I would say. All right, it's...
yeah,
kind of. Mm-hmm. All right, so Mr. B, let's get into this. What is your synopsis for issue number 36 of Marvel Team Up?
Okay, our story begins with Spidey taking down 2 bank robbers. But before he can take them in, he's blasted in the back and rendered unconscious by an unknown assailant. Spidey awakens, strapped to a table in a mad scientist laboratory. And what's crazier is that strapped down next to him is none other than the Frankenstein monster. The mad scientist introduces himself as Baron Ludwig von Stuff, a.k.a. the Monster Maker. I think he's the only person that calls himself that. But anyway, he begins to monologue, but then Spider-Man kicks him, knocking him into his goons, and then he breaks his bonds and frees the monster, and the two escape. As the mad scientist's goons are searching for our heroes, the monster tells Spidey his origin, plus where he's been since. Suddenly, a scream gets their attention, and the pair quickly make a run over to a clearing where the goons are menacing a young woman. They quickly dispose of the goons, only to be gassed unconscious by her. They awaken at a nearby cabin, where she explains she's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent trying to stop von Stuff. After a quick convo, Spidey and Agent Clemmer leave the monster behind because the mission requires stealth. He follows them anyway, and the trio soon finds out von Stuff was expecting them, and he has another monster as well, namely the Man-Wolf.
That's right.
There we go.
So it's a bit of a conglomeration of monsters here. I mean, technically, Spidey used to be a monster too, right, Billy? When he, you know, the six-armed, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. saga there. But, you know, yeah, so three monsters. And Spidey's called himself a monster many a time.
Mm-hmm. Jonah calls him that all the time.
Oh, yeah, really. True. So it's probably he's internalized that. It's become a part of his persona. But mm-hmm. Fantastic issue. Sal Buscema is firing on all cylinders here. It's got great action. Of course, we talk covers later on Into the Weird mm-hmm. when we compare the two covers. But I got to say, this cover teases something that we never actually get. I mean, it's not Spidey versus the monster Frankenstein at all.
No, it's a bait and switch.
That's right. Exactly. But I love mm-hmm. the title on the splash page, Once Upon a Time in a Castle. That's Jerry Conway's for sure. title for this issue. Now, Billy, did you notice mm-hmm. one of the bank robbers that Spidey takes out in the beginning? It's called Hermie.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I was going to mention that, yep.
And that's what my grandma used to call me, man. Herman? Yeah, aww. She used to call me Hermie when I was young. Yeah, so this is a bittersweet issue. But, you know, I remember this issue from way back when. So, you know, I was glad you picked it. And, you know... Spidey makes fun of this guy's name because this bank robber, when Hermie gets just clobbered by Spidey, the other guy says, Hermie, look out, we're being blitzed. Spidey says, oh, Hermie, look out, it's Spider-Man. You could have said that. That's more original. I think being mm-hmm. blitzed is better. Sorry, Spidey.
Yeah, I think Spidey's off on that one. Yeah,
definitely. He tosses a garbage can at Spidey. Spidey punches the garbage can back into the guy's, you know, torso. Laying him
Benny.
Out. Benny. And then Hermie tries to blast Spidey. And then, you know, they make good their escape because Spidey's blasted in the back by some kind of a laser. You know, mm-hmm. from von Stuff.
Yeah.
That's how he kidnaps mm-hmm. him. Now I'm just wondering, where was his spider sense, Billy? Where was Spidey's spider mm-hmm. sense in that situation? I mean, he's dodged pumpkin bombs, you know, electros, current, and now he can't dodge this laser that hits him in the back? Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he was too excited about beating up on these poor punks, I guess.
Yeah, he really makes fun of Hermie. I mean, most of the time when he says the name, it's in quotes.
and then the next page where he wakes up. Oh, that is such an awesome page. That is like oof. Emblazoned in my head for some reason, this page. I love it.
Yeah, where they're both strapped to those tables mm-hmm. In the mad scientist's lab in the castle. And mm-hmm. It's in Switzerland, right, Billy? If I'm not mistaken, isn't it? Like, haven't they been transported that far, or what, is it just somewhere in the?
I mean, it's Bedlam in the Balkans, so it's in the Balkan region.
Oh, it's in the Balkans. So... They mentioned that. Okay, yeah. I must have missed that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, mm-hmm. there you go. And you know, so Spidey's been transported there by von Stuff, and then of course he makes no, you know, he's not ashamed of his name at all. He just introduces himself right off. Right when he opens the door and sees Spidey, you know, where he strapped him and the Frankenstein monster in. And then Spidey, man, very powerful. I mean, the Frankenstein monster couldn't even break out of these manacles. But mm-hmm. as soon as Baron Ludwig von Stuff the Monster Maker, right, as he dubbed himself, makes himself known.
Mm-hmm.
Spidey just kicks him in the breadbasket, sending him flying back into his goons. And I love the fact that Jerry Conway's dialogue here is, Spidey says, "Buddy, what I like to call you couldn't be printed." Nice one, Spidey. Yeah, keep it ear friendly there for the kids. And then Thrum, man, this is a great Sal Buscema action sequence where Spidey kicks him back into his goons, and then Spidey breaks free from these steel manacles. Not even the Frankenstein monster could do that. And yet Von Stoop says he wants Spidey for his agility alone and the Frankenstein monster for his strength.
Aptitude for figuring out who has what skill or better skill is pretty bad.
Yeah, terrible. But, you know, it's an interesting premise, right, Billy? The Monster Maker, Baron von Stoof. I think this is his first and only... Well, he would appear again in the next issue, of course, but I didn't see him ever again in my comic book reading career, and I couldn't find it online that he reappeared. So I think these two issues, you know, 36 and 37 for Marvel Team-Up, are his first and only appearances, maybe.
Well, that's probably for the best.
Yeah. What a joke. I mean, we'll see in issue two when he's... We'll see what happens to this character. It's quite pathetic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's a great action sequence. Spidey frees the monster. They jump through the castle window, and they're on the lam, so to speak. And there's these James Bond-esque villains on skis in chapter two, which is called The Cold Wind of Doom. And they're hunting down Spy Who Loved Me, you know, for Yara's only style. They're hunting Spidey on skis and the Frankenstein monster. Yeah. And then, of course, Spider-Man's curious about this Frankenstein monster, right? He's never read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein because he needs the Frankenstein monster to give him a panel-by-panel description of his origin and his adventures.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, two pages full of it, though. It's awesome. I love it. I really like the art there. And what he goes through, great.
Now, Billy, did you notice a discrepancy there in his origin tale? I mean, yes, he did sort of end up killing Victor Frankenstein, but not really, not the way that this origin describes it. Mm-mm. I mean, Victor Frankenstein perished on the ship, right? Eventually, after hunting the monster, after the whole sordid tale of Mary Shelley played itself out in the Marvel comic pages, you know, and it wasn't as it was presented here, but I think he just shortened the tale for Spidey's sake, you know, because it did sort of lead to the death of Victor Frankenstein. So it is indirectly the monster who killed him. But the way it's shown here is he's just strangling his own creator.
Chokes him to death,
Yeah. And crazy. Then he pounds a couple of villagers into the ground. He's hunted.
That's great.
It did happen, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, then we get to the next page, which tells of the more contemporary, you know, events where he met up with some 20th century folks. So he was in that sideshow filled in, you know, in this coffin full of chemicals, and then he was freed by, a couple. And then, of course, he encountered Dracula. He battled some monsters, and this is now more in line with what's happening in the Monster of Frankenstein Marvel series.
Comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I had to go to this trade to look up. You know, I remember the encounter with Dracula. I think that was like a three-issue story, and that was, like you said, John Buscema and John Verporten inking him. Oh, glorious artwork. Amazing. And then after that, fought some kind of insane Rintra-looking creature. And I think there was multiple ones that were insane-looking, but they kind of remind you of Rintra. But then he says about a friendship with this youth named Ralph Cacconi or something like that it's called. I'm like, I don't remember that guy, but I did, like I said, go to my trade, and sure enough, for like the last like four or five issues of the regular series, he had this Rick Jones type sidekick guy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Not a very memorable character, but definitely someone that the Frankenstein monster could talk to, you know, then it wasn't just him and his thoughts. So he served a purpose, I guess. So interesting. Yeah, man, this is a great series. You know, I loved the way it ended. Many people don't, but, you know, obviously they ended it. It wasn't doing great on sales. It was one of Marvel's lower selling titles from the Monster line. But, you know, I don't know why, though. It was just doing really good. I mean, great stories, great art. So, Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. Dracula was the more popular one, the Tomb of Dracula, and of course Werewolf by Night being second. So Monster Frankenstein had to take a third place. I understand that. But I'm glad that they gave us a recap here, because a lot of readers of Marvel Team-Up might not have been reading Monster Frankenstein, you know? So good on Jerry to quickly give a recap there. And Spidey, you know, he's sitting there in the snow listening to this tale, and he's holding his head. He's like, whoa, man, this is one of the craziest stories I've heard.
Right. And but he does, like, think about, like, you know, he's seen a lot of crazy crap in his life, too. So it's like, okay, I buy it. And that would make sense. That does hold water, because you can't have somebody that's like, oh, I got bit by a spider and I have spider power, saying, oh, no, there couldn't be a monster like this. So he think, yeah, okay, I get it, yeah.
Yeah, he just goes with it. You're right. Up to this point, you know, Spidey's, like you said, he's already an experienced, superhero. So, yeah, he's seen crazier stuff, especially hanging out with Doctor Strange.
Yeah, for real.
So then, you know, they hear the scream, right, Billy? And it's this very attractive blonde lady on skis, cornered by, you know, von Stupp's hit squad, and they're about to kill or capture her. So Spidey and the Frankenstein monster take a hand. They leap off this cliff and just start.
I love that panel.
Oh, that's a great panel. The Frankenstein monster, especially, he looks almost Wolverine-esque in his fury there as he leaps off this cliff.
Yeah, he does. That's a good call there. Eh? He does. It looks insane.
And you must think that the guy he lands on is dead, right? He's a pancake, because Womp, the Frankenstein monster, from a 40-foot cliff, lands on this one guy on skis. Spidey.
Just like, Andre the Giant just splashes him. Yeah,
that's it. Andre the Giant style. And then, you know, Spidey just punches this guy, and he punches him hard enough to generate a thoom sound effect. So that guy must be down for the count. And
Oh man,
this, I mean, Frankenstein
the
monster.
The next panel.
Oh, that's great.
Kim slaps the guy.
Yeah, Frankenstein monster has a very powerful slap. Not as quite as elegant and as well-worn as Dracula's pimp slap, but he gives a good one. And then the cliff edge collapses and this girl takes a plunge, but the Frankenstein monster can react quickly enough to grab a hold of her and ends up saving her. And then this is now typical S.H.I.E.L.D., right, Billy? I mean, we'll find out why I said S.H.I.E.L.D., because this is just the way they operated at this point in time. Spidey and the Frankenstein monster save her, and instead of telling them who she really is, she thanks them and then takes out a can of knockout gas and just lays them out with this knockout gas.
And Spider-Man, he's thinking exactly what I was thinking the first time I read this, too. Like, oh, crap, let me guess, those goons were sent to harass her to make it look like, you know, to draw them out.
Yeah.
But she's really working with Ludwig. Yeah, but she's not. And it's just, that was a good swerve. I like that. But yeah, the Spidey's like, oh, it's you. You're one of them, and we fell for it. And then the two of them are laying there knocked out.
And it turns out, I mean, in chapter 3 now, which is called To Make a Monster, they wake up in this comfortable, like, lodge in the mountains with a fire, in the fireplace there, and her sitting on this comfortable armchair, and she turns out to be, a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And, she even introduces herself as Agent Klemmer, S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent 324, and she's here to stop von Stupp. Now, why lay them out with a gas attack? You know, and how did she get them into the cabin? Like, the Frankenstein monster must weigh a ton.
Some kind of S.H.I.E.L.D. tech, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
But maybe, you know, she's got some of Fury's LMDs there.
And I don't even know why she bothered bringing the Frankenstein monster, because apparently she doesn't need him, because Spidey and Agent Kimmler, they decide, to just stealthily infiltrate the headquarters, and they say, no, the Frankenstein monster is too, you know, noticeable. You gotta stay behind. So they hurt his feelings. And this is not the last time they're going to be hurting his feelings, Billy. I mean,
unfortunately not.
They're going to tap dance on his heart a couple of times during these two issues. It's horrible. I can understand that from Agent Klemmer, but from Spidey? Man, come on.
Yeah, he should know better.
Yeah, so they ski through the mountain. Spidey swings behind, possibly gaining, you know, web holds on these alpine trees or something. But I don't know. He swings behind her, keeps pace with her while she's skiing down this mountain slope towards Von Stupp's castle. And then the Frankenstein monster decided to follow in their tracks. He's going to be their backup. He's not going to just stay put in this comfy cabin. And yeah. Now, this is a good scene, right, Billy? I love it when Spider-Man, you know, plays the ninja, because we saw that in the classic Spider-Man movies from the 70s, right? he takes out these guards, you know, ninja style, mm-hmm. silently with his webbing.
And I love when he webs people's mouths shut, and then he webs a guy's mouth shut and picks him up by his webbed mouth.
Oh, what it's the great. Heck? Yeah, and he took out the other two guards with web missiles or web bludgeons that he whipped up.
Yeah, which I've never seen him do that before.
Yeah, I mean he's thrown web pellets before and stuff like that, but it's more to irritate a foe than to really render them unconscious. But this time around, mm-hmm. man, those guys are out. They're unconscious. Mm-hmm. They're probably injured severely mm-hmm. by the what seem to be these solid web objects that Spidey just hurled at them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he whips them up to a window. And this is Spidey showing off in front of Agent Klemmer, who's a very... she's a super hot-looking blonde, right, Billy? I'm sorry, I shouldn't be saying that, but she's very attractive. And she's drawn by Sal to look incredibly alluring. And Spidey,
absolutely. Yeah.
He whips them up to this window after she says, "How are we going to get up there?" And he says, "Lady... You know, rule number one in the superhero biz, always make sure of your transportation. Me, I made sure of that by inventing my web shooter." So he's not just a superhero, he's also a genius. He just wants to make that... make that clear in front of this hot S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Mm-hmm. And then, but she's not having it. She says, "Can we talk about your scientific genius later, masked man? We came here to do a job, remember?" And he says,
"She's not having his shenanigans."
No. "I remember, but who says a job can't be fun?" "Come on, Spidey. Concentrate." And then, Frankenstein monster lumbers through the castle entrance. He takes out some goons. Wow, and that's done spectacularly, right? The one guy mm-hmm. he hits on the back of the head with a what sound effect. You can feel that. And the other guy, he just also slams in the back.
Hammer fist,
So he can be stealthy. He proved Spidey and Agent Klemmer wrong there, right? Mm-hmm. Because he stealthily took out these guys. Then he opens the door, and then a part of the story has already happened that happened off-panel, because he hears some sounds behind this door. He hears the voices of Spidey and Klemmer, so he thinks he'll assist them. So when he opens the door, what does he see, Mr. B?
He sees, Spidey and Agent Klemmer face to face with Man-Wolf. It's great.
Yeah, and that's kind of like a surprise to readers at the time, not to us.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that the Man-Wolf would suddenly appear. But hey, that makes sense. Yeah. This is a monster comic, and this is the monster maker we're dealing with, Von Stupp. So why not have another monster? So his sinister plan was not just to combine, to dissect the Frankenstein monster and Spidey and to combine them in a monster with both of their abilities. Oh no, he also wanted to add a third monster to the mix. And this is, of course, the Man-Wolf, John Jameson, mm-hmm. Spidey's old foe. So I love that, Billy. The next issue, and the Man-Wolf makes three. Look at Agent Klemmer's face there, drawn by Buscema. I mean, she's way out of her depth there. She wasn't expecting this.
Yeah, she's not ready for, it's already the Frankenstein monster, but at least he's kind of, a quote-unquote hero. But, the Man-Wolf looks like he's, frothing at the mouth, ready to bite somebody's head off. So she's really scared.
Now, you could probably chalk this up to Von Stupp's insanity, but what is he thinking? He's releasing the Man-Wolf in the chamber. He doesn't have any guards around. He's got no way of restraining the Man-Wolf. I mean, you might think that he has a way of controlling the Man-Wolf, but we find out he doesn't. He just let him loose in this chamber, thinking the Man-Wolf would attack Spidey and, Agent Klemmer. And he's just standing there in the background, introducing the Man-Wolf. So he could be, his throat could be ripped out at any moment.
I don't understand how... Because I think it might be in the next issue, possibly, he says something about being able to control him, but I don't know how he never elaborates on how he's doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of looks like he is, but it turns out the Man-Wolf's not under his control in the next issue. We'll see.
No.
But yeah, he probably thought he might have him tamed because he teleported him there and then had him there for a while, possibly longer than he had Spidey and the Frankenstein monster. So he could have done something that he thought might have put him under his control. We don't know. That's not elaborated upon.
Yeah, maybe he's got some Scooby snacks or something. Who knows?
yeah, there you go. I'm just thinking that I'm loving it, Mr. B. I don't want to nitpick here because it's just Jerry Conway throwing all kinds of crazy into the mix here. And he's just going monster on monster sandwich. So I'm loving it. And Spidey's in right in the middle. So now we get to the next issue, which is Marvel Team Up number 37. And that was also from 1975, specifically on sale June the 24th. Edited by Marv Wolfman, cover by Ed Hannigan and John Romita inking. The first cover, of course, was by Ed Hannigan as well, but we had Michael Esposito inking there. And then the title of this issue is Snow Death. And writer Jerry Conway, again, penciled by Sal, inked by Vince Coletta, once more lettered by Karen Mantlo, and colored by Phil Rachelson. And this you can also find in the Essential Marvel Team-Up Volume 2. Or, I neglected to mention, the way I'm reading it, Mr. B, is in one of my masterworks, the Marvel Team-Up Masterworks Volume 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, gotcha. I don't have the complete run, though. That's what really grates me. I just have 3, 4, and 5. Yeah. 1 and 2 are very difficult to get.
I have probably, what's Marvel Team-Up, like 150 issues? I probably have about 80 or 90, maybe 100. I'm still only about two-thirds of the way complete.
Ooh, no, I have even less than that. I think I've got like 40 or something, or even a little bit less than 40. But you know, I did have more when I was a kid. I don't know though, because they got lost. They were some part of the comics that in the 90s I lost due to water damage. But I didn't have a lot of them, you know, either. So I think if you tally my current collection of Marvel Team Up with the ones I used to have, it would probably put me at 45 or 50. But you know, I have the ones that I want, the ones that I really, you know, based off of the characters who team up with Spidey, and that's what counts for me. But Mr. B, you should think of filling up the run.
I'm gonna try, man. I'm trying.
Yeah, it's tough, but it's possible. So, great setup here. Two great covers. We'll discuss covers later as well. But again, the cover here is more accurate though than the cover of 36 because Spidey would. Yes. Definitely tangle with the Man-Wolf a couple of times throughout, you know, this issue. And so we've got that set up, and then I'll launch into the synopsis. Here we go. Okay, Ludwig von Stupf has just unleashed the Man-Wolf on Spider-Man and Agent Klemmer. The Frankenstein monster is thrown in for good measure as well. After a brief battle with said Man-Wolf, he grabs Agent Klemmer, this is the Man-Wolf, and smashes out of a window, escaping into the snow. Before Spidey and Frankenstein's monsters can go after them, they are knocked out again by von Stupf. Waking up shackled to a device, von Stupf reveals his sinister plan. He wants to combine Spidey and the Frankenstein monster and the Man-Wolf's attributes into an army of monsters who sport all their abilities. Meanwhile, the Man-Wolf brings Klemmer to a remote part of the mountains where he defends her from some attacking wolves. And it appears that the Man-Wolf is intent upon making the hot Agent Klemmer his mate. She escapes from him after convincing him to forage for some food, and then she runs into the mountains hoping to get to safety. Meanwhile, Spidey and the Frankenstein monster manage to break free again of their shackles. Come on, von Stupf, get some better shackles there. This is the second time they've done that. And they get the drop on a sleeping von Stupf. Who cries after he realizes he's been captured. Spidey goes after the Man-Wolf and Klemmer. He finds the Man-Wolf battling some wolves yet again. And Agent Klemmer, cowering in terror. The Man-Wolf is injured and almost falls off a cliff, but Spidey manages to save him with his webbing without breaking his back. Afterwards, Gwen Stacy style. Afterwards, the Man-Wolf is taken into S.H.I.E.L.D. custody. Spider-Man talks about how hard it must be for somebody to love a monster. The Frankenstein monster, unintentionally hurt by Spider-Man's feelings, by Spider-Man's comments, walks away from the scene. Spidey doesn't realize the damage he's done until after they notice that the Frankenstein monster is not aboard the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicopter when it lifts off the end. So yeah, pretty terrible there what Spidey did at the end. I kind of spoiled it in the synopsis, but yeah, that's a very sad ending because Spidey and Agent Clemmer, they just didn't take the Frankenstein monster's feelings into account. They're probably hanging out with the Thing too much. Yeah, it's a tearjerker there.
It's awful.
Yeah, man, it's pretty bad. But you know, the content itself, this could have worked. You know, if that dissector device that the monster maker von Stoop had, you know, if he could have combined them into an army of man wolves with the agility and speed of Spider-Man and the strength of the Frankenstein monster, that would have been some pretty hard going, you know, for the rest of the Marvel U. But he didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, he fell asleep at his desk.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I do like the panel depicting that if he would have succeeded. And it shows these, like, man wolves terrorizing the city and, like, throwing cars around and killing cops and killing just bystanders and stuff. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty...
I like that.
It's mad. Yeah, I love that, too. I mean, that would have been a fantastic... That was all just a dream of his, but that would have been a fantastic scenario. How would Spidey and the Frankenstein monster and the man wolf have battled that? But it never came to pass, you know, so...
No.
Luckily for them, but I guess unluckily for us, because I would have liked to see a man-wolf apocalypse playing itself out. So there's some great action panels here, Billy. I mean, the opening splash to issue 37 is Spidey versus the man-wolf. And there's a couple of panels of them, traditional Spidey and man-wolf action. Spidey avoiding the claws and punching the man-wolf, and then them wrestling a bit. And Spidey trying to keep the fangs from tearing out his throat. That's kind of how every Spidey-Man wolf battle plays itself out, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure, yeah. And then, he kind of gets the upper edge on Spidey there, and then he gets grabbed by the scruff of the neck by Frankenstein monster, and that's a good part, too. I like that.
Yeah, now the Frankenstein monster up to this part, Billy, he's fought werewolves before, you know, in some of the early comics there from his Marvel title. He came upon a village plagued by a werewolf, so he knows how to fight werewolves. And the trick with the werewolf is to get some distance between you and you know, the wolf. So he hurls him into the wall. But the man-wolf is way tougher than your regular werewolf, right? And he's not a werewolf at all. I mean, his powers are space-spawned, you know, space-fueled magic that turned him into the man-wolf through that space jewel.
Yeah.
And then, of course... it seems that now that the Frankenstein monsters hurled him close to Agent Clemmer, where she's standing, she's going to be the next victim. But he looks on her, sees how incredibly attractive she is, thanks to Sal Buscema. He grabs her, leaps through the window, and they're gone. And Spidey and the Frankenstein monster's distracted by this weird turn of events. I mean, they thought he was going to rip her apart. But actually, Spidey should have known better, because the man-wolf... He's good at not attacking the ladies, you know. He attacks policemen in New York City pretty easily, but he always spares the ladies. So this is no exception, right, Billy? And they're blasted by von Stoop with this... he could have just patented this weapon and sold it to AIM or to, you know, Hydra, because this weapon is powerful enough to, with one blast, take out Spidey and the monster Frankenstein. Now, that's impressive, right? Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, he's obviously has some pretty good brains for technology.
Yeah, he's got super science. He looks like a deranged BG with a monocle, right? Don't you think, Billy? I mean, the hairstyle, the beard, this is some. He's got a crazy look to him. And then this green jumpsuit with these yellow gloves. You know, probably the Red Skull's his hero. The green jumpsuit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he straps them to the table yet again, and he's just gloating. And then Spidey gets him to monologue a bit. Classic trick there, Spidey. He says, like, explain to us your master plan. And then he says, oh, that's right. I haven't explained it to you, have I? Very well, Spider-Man. Listen well to the master plan of Baron Ludwig von Stoop.
Oh, yeah, that's so great. Yeah, like I said, he says about his plan to... kind of like splice all three of their powers together and make this, you know, army of monsters. And then he hits the button and they start slowly inching towards the the little crazy rays, the little laser beams that are zapping down here.
Yeah, I love that, the name he gives it, the dissector. And you know, the way that he activates the button is he slams his fist down on it for extra emphasis when he says, because of that, you will die. Because he labels, he puts Spider-Man and the Frankenstein monster in the camp of the people who mocked him, mocked his genius. Mm-hmm. And even cried, like he wiped a tear from his face when he remembered his years of bullying at the hands of these ignoramuses. And then, you know, he says, you will all pay for mocking my genius.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that leaves Spider-Man wondering how they're going to get out of this. And he says, why do I get the feeling I should have kept my mouth shut? So he shouldn't have gotten the monologue going because this actually... caused the monster maker Von Stupp to hasten their death, right, Billy? So he says, I should have done what you did, Frankie. I should have, you know, do me a favor and don't even answer. You know, because if the answer is yes, Spider-Man, you should have kept your mouth shut, as he should have done in many cases in his career. But then we cut to chapter 2, Wolfpack. So Billy, what happens here?
Yeah, so, you know, like you said, we have Agent Clemmer, and she's with Manwolf, and of course, you know, he went swinging off with her, and you think, oh, what is he going to do? Going to kill her or this or that? But he kind of, like, looks at her like, you know, he's, you know, has feelings for her, and I don't mean, like, he just fell in love with her overnight or anything, but, you know, like you said, she's a beautiful lady, and, you know, he's really a man underneath all that fur and claws, so he's kind of, you know, looking at her with this, like, sad face on, but then, you know, you hear this... you know, growling, and a real pack of wolves decides to attack him and, you know, try to kill Agent Clemmer.
Now, the sound effects here are great, right, Billy? I mean, on that chapter 2, the first page of chapter 2, where you've got Agent Clemmer trying to reason with him, and then he's just saying, arr, you know, and then she tries to reason with him again, and then he says, arr, and then suddenly he turns around at alarm because something's approaching, and then he says, arr, and then there's a pack of wolves, and they answer with a very loud, so it's like pirates talking to each other here, or what? So that's great. And then he growls, they growl, they attack, crack, he takes out one with a back swipe, and then jumps on the wrist, and this is just the most brutal wolf on wolf fight you'll ever see. I mean, he grabs one wolf and tears its throat out, and then smashes another one into the ground. And
crazy.
Then they make a run for it. Ay, that's the sound effect. It's great. And then he turns around, jaws dripping with drool, and she's thinking, oh man, now he's in a battle fury. He's going to rip me to pieces as food. But then he doesn't, and she realizes he wants her for his mate. I mean, that point is driven home by Conway in the narrative, in the caption boxes, in her Agent Clemmer's thoughts. So she says, okay, I got to think quick.
Think fast.
Think fast here. Get him to become distracted or leave me for a bit. Oh, I'll mimic that I want some food, that I'm hungry. So it works.
Yeah, he goes to look for some food and she splits, and then he comes back and he's like, he looks really sad. You know, it's not like he's mad. Like, how dare she run away? He almost looks like sad, like he's going to cry.
Yeah, I mean, he caught a rabbit for her. Come on, it took him 15 minutes. To catch this rabbit, and he's like, arr, ay, 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 when she's gone. He's just like so sad. He's not even howling. He's just whining.
And then back at the lab here.
Now, okay, Frankenstein monster for the win, Mr. B. What does he do to get them out of this death trap?
Well, hey, Von Stupp, for how dumb he is, he did smarten up a little bit here. This time, he has them on this machine, you know, these platforms, and their feet are actually, you know, strapped down too with these, you know, devices, so they absolutely cannot move, you know, their arms or their legs at all. So the Frankenstein monster, he digs his fingers into the, you know, like the belt they're on of this machine, and rips through it underneath to the, you know, mechanical apparatus underneath that, like, you know, powers the machine and, like, rips everything apart down there so it comes to a stop. And then, you know, he's like, okay, now that I've done that, how do we get out of here, Spider-Man? And Spidey's like, okay. And he uses his web shooter to, you know, change the little nozzle so it aims at the straps that have them strapped down, the harness, and zaps that and busts it so they can get out.
Yeah, I mean, well, he must have been reading some Batman comics, you know, because this is a pretty good escape there from Spidey and the Frankenstein monster. And then they're free. They walk up to, you know, the living quarters in this castle, and they find Baron von Stupf deep in a dream where he's mumbling in his sleep. Now, Billy, speak on this. This is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, they creep up to the door, and Spider-Man says, "Sounds like he's mumbling something." And he goes, "Yep, as a matter of fact, he's mumbling in his sleep." And von Stupf says, "No, everyone must like me. If they don't, I can kill them." And Spidey says, "Let's put this bird out of his misery," and just webs him up while he's sleeping. And the guy wakes up. "What is the meaning of this outrage?" And they're like, "It means," chuckles, "that you're done. The game's over. It's kaput. Get the picture?" And the guy starts crying.
Wah! That's literally what he says. Wah! And Spidey says, "Does that mean yes or no?" And then he's like, "Snark, waffle, snot, sob."
Yeah, and Monster Frankenstein's standing there like, "Is this guy for real?"
Listen, listeners, I can guarantee you these panels are going to go on the website, and if you don't have them in front of you, you're going to have to look at sinkintotheweird.com, where this podcast addendum post will have all of these panels, because it's insane. It's so funny. I mean, I was laughing fit to bust when I was reading this sequence, right, Billy? I mean, this guy, he's so pathetic. And then Spidey leaves the Frankenstein monster to take care of him. And, you know, he heads off into the wilds into the mountains. Chapter 3, Survival. And he finds the man wolf looking for Clemmer, and they start to fight, right? But then they hear another scream, and the man wolf nearly disembowels Spidey here, with Spidey being distracted by the scream of Agent Clemmer. But the man wolf doesn't finish him off, even though he could have easily. He runs through the snow in the direction of the scream, and Spidey's thinking that he's hunting Agent Clemmer. So Spidey follows him. He again attacks the man wolf. They have a battle, but the man-wolf escapes, and then Spidey starts to put two and two together. He's saying the man-wolf doesn't really care about him. He wants to get to Agent Clemmer for some reason, and then again there's this pack of wolves menacing her. So I don't know if you've seen that movie Frozen, Billy. It's a movie about a horror movie where these three kids get trapped on a ski lift.
Night. I have not.
Yeah. It's horror out the wazoo, because, you know, you see what a pack of wolves can do to a human being. I mean, that is just graphically portrayed. Ooh, and you don't want to see this in the pages of comics. Well, I do, because we're horror fans, but not in Marvel. Come on. And then, you know, again, Man-Wolf shows up in the nick of time. So he distracts the wolves with a growl. But this seems to be a bigger pack, right, Billy? Or a more experienced pack, because they give the man-wolf a serious, injury here. One of them gets onto his back and almost rips out a huge chunk of flesh out of his shoulder there.
Yeah.
But he manages to
I like that panel, too. It's, you know, it's pretty detailed, you know. And again, not to beat up on Vince Coletta, but sometimes the comics he inks don't have a lot of detail in them. But this one, that panel there is really good.
Yeah.
Really good, really detailed. I like it a lot.
No. You know, one thing you got to understand, we've knocked Vince Coletta a lot. And it's true, you know, that sometimes he erases Kirby's backgrounds and stuff like that, which is blasphemy. And he should be taken to task for that. But, you know, sometimes he really does a good job. Maybe when the deadline is not too bad, or, you know, I don't know, when he can take his time. And here he definitely did a good job on the inks. So well done.
Yeah, because you can still see a lot of Sal Buscema here too. Ooh, so that to me means he took it easy. He didn't go real heavy on things here. So
definitely. Mm-hmm. And you know, then he hurls one of these wolves off the cliff. The rest turn tail, and then he's injured. And of course, Clemmer at this point in time, she doesn't have feelings for him, but she knows he wouldn't hurt her. So she feels sympathy for him. She feels sad that, you know, he, in her defense, he's almost mortally wounded. Then Spider-Man shows up, and then just as he shows up, the man-wolf collapses in pain and agony and falls off the side of the cliff. And he thinks that, you know, he wasn't going to save the man-wolf at all at this point in time, because he was still thinking that Clemmer was in danger. But then she screams at him. She says, "Spider-Man, save him!" And he's like,
Oh, what?
And he says, "Save? Good Lord. Okay." And then he does. He pulls out his web shooters, Now, Billy, I think he learned from the whole Gwen Stacy debacle because he webs the armpits, not the tummy, and so the spine doesn't snap in this case. But still, sproosh, he sort of falls into the snow at the bottom of the cliff. But he hoists him up. The man wolf's fine, and Agent Clemmer then at the end says, "You know, I'm just glad he's alive." So. You know, she has developed some feelings for the man wolf here because he saved her life twice. Three times, if you count him, you know, getting her out of that castle.
So, right, yeah, von Stoop.
Yeah, he would have probably killed her, you know, because he had no use for her. He had use for Spider-Man and the Frankenstein monster. And then we get this very terrible scene at the end. Now, Billy, speak on this last page where they just strap the heart of the Frankenstein monster to the hood of a car.
It's terrible.
It's horrible. So what happens here?
Yeah, Agent Clemmer says, "It must be terrible to go through life with a curse like John Jameson's. Imagine being so hated and feared." And again, this is her and Spidey in the forefront and Frankenstein monster, like, literally 2 feet behind them. And then she says, "As though you were some sort of monster." And Spidey says, "It's tough, I guess. Even a creature like that wants to be loved, right, Clemmer?" And she says, "I suppose so, Spider-Man. He must be lonely." And Spidey says, "Lady, there are things I could tell you about lonely that would turn your hair white." Like you said, it shows the Frankenstein monster kind of turning and walking away, and they're so absorbed with what they're talking about, they don't realize it. And they get on this chopper and with Man-Wolf and von Stoop, and all of a sudden, Spidey turns and says, "Right, Frankie? Hey, Frankie, he's gone." And then we see him walking away like, you know, Incredible Hulk style, yeah. You know,
crying, sad, like, dejected,
all but crying. Yeah,
yeah. Oh man! And then Spidey says, "Clemmer, I have a feeling you and I have just won the award for being first class dumb." Talking about monsters and being a monster and being sad and lonely and having no one right in front of, right within earshot of Frankie, like Spider-Man calls him Frankie.
and then he says, "Come on, let's get back to New York. At least there, you know, when you're putting a poor jerk down."
Jeez. Yeah, that's where Spider-Man excels at putting jerks down, because they are jerks. He ended up putting the Frankenstein monster down, who's not a jerk, who's like one of the nicest creatures in Marvel.
Yeah.
Damn, Spidey. Yeah, he screwed up big time there. And then, interesting, Billy. But yeah, two great issues that you ended up picking here. And with two fantastic covers. I mean, these are kind of the sort of issues that I would pick up based on cover art alone, you know. So I probably did when I bought them. I can't remember, though. These are kind of the issues I can't remember where I got them. Was it off the spinner rack? Was it at a bookstore, stationery store? I don't know. But I picked them up, you know, early in my comic book collecting career, though, because judging by, you know, what they look like and you know what the condition they're in and how many times I read and reread them. But two fantastic covers. Let's speak on them. What do you think of, or just describe the cover a little bit of 36 and then 37, and then you pick your favorites.
Okay, so I think I forgot to say who the cover artist was in 36. It's Ron Wilson and Mike Esposito. So, you know, two very good artists right there. 36, you know, it shows Spider-Man, and he's like clinging to the inside of a castle wall. And Monster Frankenstein's grabbing him by the leg, and he's going to try to kill him. And he says, "You attacked me, now you will die." And Spider-Man has some interesting dialogue and says, "Not if I cream you first, Patches." And he goes, "But how do I defeat a guy who's immortal?" And he's punching him, and it doesn't seem to be affecting him. And I like it. It's, you know, it's got purple up top, and, you know, it's got Spider-Man on the left side in a little, like, not the caption box up there in a corner,
the corner box.
There's Spider-Man on one side and Frankenstein monster on the other side, and he looks like he's doing some dance moves. I like that.
Yeah, he's disco dancing or something there, Matt, or doing the twist, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's hopping and bopping to the monster mash.
That must be it. Yeah,
yeah, that's it. And then, you know, you've got the corner box art showing up on both sides, like you say, within these circles that look like kind of like full moons, which I love. Yeah, very horror-esque cover, and the Frankenstein monster looking great. So fantastic cover. I love the title too, Bedlam in the Balkans.
Yeah, it's pretty good overall. Very good cover. I like it quite a bit.
Excellent. Yeah. So what do you think of the cover, or describe a little bit of the cover to 36, which is also great.
Or 37, you mean?
Oh,
yeah.
37,
so 37, sorry. Yeah, 37 has, you know, like I said, the just like the 36, it has the two corner boxes, you know, opposite of each other. And this one, you know, of course, has the Mad Wolf. He's like howling at the moon. And then there's a giant moon in the background. And Mad Wolf is pulling like a Spidey move here and has Spider-Man like in a leg scissors wrestling move here, swinging from the side of a castle. And it looks really cool. I really love this. And then, you know, you get the caption at the bottom, murder means the Man Wolf. And then yeah. Action aplenty and the Frankenstein monster too.
Oof.
So really good.
Fantastic. This cover does its job. It sells the comic and it sells the story and sells everything about it, you know, because you'd want to read this. Spidey versus the Man Wolf and then the Frankenstein monster contained within these pages. There's no way you can pass up something like this. You know, unless you're not a Spidey fan, which is like, I cannot believe that anybody at this point in time in Marvel would not have been a Spider-Man fan.
You're right.
Now, believe I've said before, like, especially when we discussed Spidey teaming up with the Man thing earlier this year, I don't like Spidey not being in an urban setting, you know, where he's not surrounded by buildings that he can swing through and the New York locales that we know so well in the Spider-Man comics. But, you know, when he teams up with the Defenders and he goes to other realms and, you know, I like that sometimes. You know, sometimes you could see Spidey playing well, especially where there's other characters around that he can bounce his humor off of. The Defenders, yes. Doctor Strange, you know, Valkyrie. I found Spider-Man when he joined the Defenders later on during the Defenders run quite endearing. You know, Spidey's always a good character to have hanging around. But I don't like him as a team player, really. I think he works best in his own title, really. I think Stan Lee even discovered that early on. That's why I never had Spider-Man join the Avengers. I mean, he had them try to join the Fantastic Four for laughs. But, you know, all of that. So, but here, it really works for me. I like the fact that, you know, Spider-Man plays well with these two monsters.
And Jerry Conway, I like this quite a bit. Yeah, as long as the whoever the writer is, as long as they get, you know, Spidey's personality and his dialogue right, and of course Jerry Conway is one of the best ever for Spider-Man, I'm fine with him being in a different locale. So it doesn't bother me, but you got to get that, you know, he's got to have that banter and, you know, some moments of pathos and stuff like that. You got to have that with Spider-Man.
Yeah, and you know, when I read this villain... Again, reread it, you know, these two issues. I thought this villain might have showed up again later, but like I say, he didn't. But the reason why I thought that was, I don't know if you ever read John Byrne's Fantastic Four run, but there was a time during that run when the Thing kind of went solo. You know, after Secret Wars, he stayed behind.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He had his
own
title.
World. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he had his own title. But in the pages of Fantastic Four, even, She-Hulk joined the team, but then they would still show what Ben Grimm was up to. You know, on Battle World or so, and during one of these story arcs, he was in a world of monsters, in the world of the classic Universal monsters. So he met up with the Frankenstein monster, but it wasn't this, of course, this one. This was all part of this dream realm that they were in, and he also met up with you know, the traditional werewolf, which was made famous, you know, by Universal in the Wolfman, you know, by Lon Chaney Jr. And then, you know, there was this villain who was controlling this troop of monsters called Dr. Julius Ackerman, the Monster Master. Do you remember
that?
That's great.
So I haven't read those, but I'm like, are they making fun of, you know, kind of Forey Ackerman?
yeah, exactly. They are, yeah. And then, you know, I was thinking, okay, this guy must have been him, you know, for some reason. But then I pulled out those issues, so no, it wasn't. It wasn't the Monster Maker. It was the Monster Master. I thought there might have been a second Monster Maker or something, or the Thing, maybe, you know, but you know, dreaming that up. But no, it wasn't. They're two completely separate characters. Yeah, this is the Monster Maker, and that was the Monster Master. But I quickly had to do some bin diving there to make sure that that I've got my facts straight. Still pretty great, Billy. And we got to do some of those issues for another Halloween. The Thing versus those monsters. That's some of my favorite Fantastic Four issues.
Absolutely.
So great picks, Mr. B, and we'll head straight on into Bronze Age Brilliance and Mighty Marvel Missteps. I will, however, before we do that, say that my favorite cover is the cover to 36, though, because that's just a fantastic Frankenstein monster. What's your favorite cover?
You know, I'm really torn because I want to say 36, but I do think 36 is very busy and has too much dialogue on it. You know, if the characters didn't have the dialogue on the cover, I think it would be hands down 36 for me. But of course, you know, the Man-Wolf doesn't speak, and Spidey isn't having any dialogue on 37. So I really like 37 because it's just not quite as busy.
Yeah, it's too Silver Agey, maybe, you know, where they have these tons of captions on the cover. Yeah, you're right. Maybe. But I love the way the Frankenstein monster looks. I also like the way the Man-Wolf looks, you know, on the cover of 37.
They both look great. Yeah,
they both look great. For some reason, I just gravitated towards that cover as a kid more than I did the rest. But you're right, the dialogue boxes sort of interrupt the action on the cover almost. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Mr. B, let's go right on into Bronze Age Brilliance. What is your Mighty Marvel misstep and Bronze Age Brilliance for these two issues?
So, for Mighty Marvel misstep, the only thing in 36 was really there was a coloring error on page 23.
Oh, really?
And it's hilarious. Yeah, it's, you know, if you look at page 23, and the whole time the Monster of Frankenstein is colored like almost like a gray, and on page 23 in the bottom right panel, he's green, like the Hulk. It just is, it's crazy. It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, right. Okay, in the Marvel Masterworks, they fixed that problem. So I guess, you know, because I'm not reading the original issues right now. I'm reading in the Masterworks. So you're probably right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're definitely
right. Well, you know what? And you know what's even funnier? In this Monster of Frankenstein trade, they did the same thing. They didn't fix it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, no. So they must have just went right off the original scans and, you know,
and
of course.
That in there,
that's
yeah.
It was, yeah, put it in there. It's wrong. And I'm like, what the heck are they? Who was in charge of this? Fire them. No, I'm just teasing. But that's the only thing I got for that one. And then 37, the only misstep I have is, you know, the two separate parts with the wolf pack attacking. It just seemed a little bit like I wish they could have thought of something else. And then I'm not a real big fan of having the Man-Wolf be heroic. I like him more as a monster kind of
anti-hero. As the antagonist rather than the protagonist in the story. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's the missteps.
I already mentioned in the beginning of our discussion, but I'm going to mention it again. There are two instances in these two comics, Billy, where Jerry Conway completely, and he used to write Spider-Man. I mean, he wrote The Death of Captain Stacy and the classic Death of Gwen Stacy and all of those, 1970s issues. And so he should have known better. Spidey's spider sense is just completely absent from both of these issues. I mean,
in the
beginning, after he takes out the robbers, when he's bushwhacked by Von Stoop's ray, there's not even a hint of his spider sense even buzzing. And then, again, later on when Von Stoop takes out the Frankenstein monster and Spider-Man with that super weapon of his, while they were distracted by the Man-Wolf, no spider sense buzz whatsoever. It's just not even, it doesn't even appear in any of these issues. So,
no.
What the hell, yeah. Conway?
that is a little weird, yeah.
Anyway, that's my only Marvel misstep there. There could have probably been more art-wise and stuff, but not. You know, the only thing that I think this is, might be Vince Coletta's inking, but, you know, or it might be Sal Buscema too, but, you know, I hate to criticize Sal. But, you know, if you look at John Romita's Spider-Man, you know, or Ross Andrews' Spider-Man, you can see that the Spider-Man costume on the chest has contours where his muscles are, you know, and where his chest... You know, where his torso is delineated by the art. But here it's just a sheer webbed image without any contours, without any details in the chest area. You know what I mean,
yeah.
Billy? So that part bothered me a little bit, you know. But I'm not sure who that is, Sal or Vince. I'm not sure. But, you know, I'm not really going to nitpick that too much. And then Bronze Age Brilliance, Mr. B.
Okay, for 36, it would definitely be Conway's dialogue.
Yeah, that's mine too. Yeah, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, I love the way, you know, he writes Spider-Man in these two issues. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
I also like that S.H.I.E.L.D. agent swerve too, where, you know, I was thinking it was going to be somebody in cahoots with Von Stoop, and it wasn't.
Pretty
cool.
That
was a shocker there the first time I read it, yeah.
Yeah, me too. That was a great bit by Conway there. I love it that he just injected like some James Bond-esque villains into it there with the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, you know, being Bond and the villains that she fought before they met her being these ski troops. And then, you know, here, I've got an example here of the Bronze Age Brilliance dialogue here, where this is just, Conway just gets Spidey when he writes him in dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent is explaining, you know, why she's there when she's got them in the cabin. And she's saying, in a word, Von Stoop wants to combine your abilities into a monster supreme. And then Spidey says, a monster supreme, eh? Sounds like an ice cream sundae. Okay, I get the picture. Von Stoop is a wacko and you want him in a padded cell. Need help? Oh, that's some great dialogue there. Yeah, he just, Conway's good at that kind of thing. So, and he was very young when he wrote these issues. I mean, obviously he was younger when he started writing. He was 18 at the time in 1970s and so forth, but he was now older, but he was still early 20s when he was writing this kind of stuff. And he was already Marvel editor too. Very brief, but, you know, he definitely, you know, wrote as like a 40-year-old comic book writer of more experience would write, I would say, easily.
Yeah, and then for the other one, the brilliant part to me, even though it is sad, it's just that sad ending, man. I mean, Frankie is a very tragic character, and man, they really ramped it up in here, so that was pretty good too.
Yeah, that's fantastic. No, these comics had so much going for them, Billy. You know, like the art, the story, the these moments filled with empathy and pathos, and you know, a real human interaction really there, even though it's monsters we're dealing with here. Fantastic from the art team, and from, of course, Conway, from a, you know, a plot standpoint. And the dialogue, the dialogue just pops. So well done there to everybody involved. So Billy, that brings us to our next segment, which is Shop Talk. We're going to take a little break, but we'll be back in a jiffy, so don't go away, listeners.
Freeze.
Oh, hi, Chet.
What the hell is going on around here?
Chet, I'm sorry. It was an accident.
An accident? Do you realize it's snowing in my room? God damn it!
Some real weird shit happened, Chet. Some real weird
shit. You don't
have
to be a genius to figure that out, Monkey Dick.
All right, we're back with Shop Talk. Okay, Mr. B, I don't know if you have anything for us. I wanted to ask you, since this is, October, we've been watching horror movies, what have you been watching so far, and what can you recommend to the listeners in that vein?
Well, one thing I will bring up is, you know, I didn't do 31 Days of Horror this October because I knew with, you know, recording and stuff like that, there was going to be no way I was going to get more than halfway through it, so I didn't even try, but I am very much looking forward to, and by the time this recording comes out, I'm sure it'll be, you know, right around that time or just after, the new Halloween film in that franchise is coming out. And I cannot wait to see that. It looks really good. The trailer looks incredible.
You and I wanted to live tweet that, but we're not gonna get it over here. So our plans were sort of derailed, right, Mr. B? But that would have been nice if we could have live tweeted it, you know, watching it at the same time. We've done that many times before, listeners. So, yeah, look for that on our Twitter account. Sometimes you and I, we live tweet. Normally on a Friday night, you know, Saturday morning over here for me, but I'm up and about and we live tweet movies. We'll do that again come this month if we can find the time, because we've got a lot of podcasts to get to.
Yeah, busy with that.
Yeah, but Mr. B, listen, I've been going pretty well with my 31 Days of Horror, even though I didn't officially announce that I'm attempting it, because obviously, you know, it might, completely, you know, fall into the pits of hell here, as I want to do halfway through. I'm kind of like no follow-through kind of person, so... But here I started with Del Toro, you know, one of my favorite, Guillermo del Toro, one of my favorite horror movie directors. I watched Crimson Peak with Erin, with my wife. She likes that movie. I'm lukewarm about that, you know, Crimson Peak. It's got, Tom Hiddleston, the Loki actor in there. And then it's got some sci-fi special effects, which isn't really horror related. I mean, if you think about Guillermo del Toro, you think about practical effects, right? So either, he didn't really use a lot of practical effects in this movie. And then I watched Kronos, his classic, probably the movie that cemented his reputation from the 1990s. And then The Devil's Backbone, my ultimate favorite Del Toro movie. And then The Mimic, which you might remember, which is less a sci-fi creature feature horror. Mama, where he was the producer, but I labeled that in my Del Toro camp. And that was the first 5 days of October. And then I started on my Carpenter, John Carpenter kick. So I rewatched The Thing, Prince of Darkness, In the Mouth of Madness, and then They Live. And then, you know, I got halfway through The Fog before, you know, Aaron said, no, you know, we got to go to sleep now. And I said, no, because I was watching all of these with my wife. So I kind of couldn't just keep watching when she was, you know, feeling tired from a hard day's, you know, of work. So, And then I started on my Cronenberg. So I'm still busy with my Cronenberg. I watched Shivers, The Brood, and The Fly from the 1980s, the remake. So I've watched all of that. So that's 13 movies so far. And what we're on, as of this recording, it's October the 13th. At least it's over here. Over where you're at, it's still the 12th. But yeah, so I've been going great guns on my Halloween list there. So hopefully this year I can make it, but I doubt it. You know, so I'm not very hopeful for 31 days of horror. And then, Mr. B, the other thing that I want to mention is this whole debacle with Superman. You know, recently on Twitter, we've realized that in the new Superman comic, there's the whole thing about Jonathan Kent, his son, being bisexual. And I'm saying, what is the big deal? You know, Jonathan Kent, he's a new character. Sure, he hooked up with some Legion of Superheroes babes, but now he's hooked up with a guy. So what's the big deal? Come on, we should be past that already. Sure, I know that there's a lot of folks out there, even people who support gay characters in comics, who say that they shouldn't take a pre-existing character and then suddenly make this complete change in his personality or in his sexuality. This is not the case. Jonathan Kent is a very new character. He's still a teenager. He's discovering who he is, or maybe he's a little bit older than a teen now, but still, he's discovering who he is. He's experimenting, and this is him. So let it be, right, Billy? What would you agree with that?
Yeah. Just hey, man. Look, if you don't like what's on the TV, change the channel.
Yeah, but don't.
Just don't. You don't need to like rant and rave and rail on something. Just be like, okay, sorry, not for me. Have a nice day, and just go have your own life, man. Don't attack other people and piss off other people over something. It's just, come on, man. Give it a rest.
Yeah. Now I can.
And you know what? Hey. Yeah. You don't like something? Make your own comic book. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah, well, that's what the comic haters are doing.
Go ahead. Go make your own comic and have a nice life. You know what I mean? Just leave people alone. If somebody wants to write a comic about something like that, that's their business. Leave them alone.
Live and let live. They're not hurting anybody. Yeah. And, you know, we need some more, you know, gay characters to also represent that part of the community and to get, you know, the gay readers who are clamoring for some characters to obviously also have someone to identify with. And Jonathan Kent is a major character in DC at the moment, so why not him? You know, I'm saying I'm all for this. So yeah, let this play out, run its course and see where it goes. And I'm hoping that, you know, it stays and that it's successful. So well done there to the people involved who made this decision, and I'm all for it. And, you know, Billy, you and I, we're all about the weird, and, you know, weird is cool. Weird should become the new norm. Of course, we don't advocate total freedom where people can just do whatever they want, you know, and let society fall by the wayside. Of course, there's got to be some limits, but come on, this is just love, you know, humans being humans, you know, love wins the day, right? At the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's just somebody writing a comic book story about a character, like, chill out, man.
Yeah.
Calm down, people.
Exactly. So that's our two cents. That's Into the Weird there, you know, for you listeners.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like live and let live. And you know, all you need is love.
I'm going to get just be nice to everybody, man. Even if you don't, you know, have the same predilections as them. Just be nice to everybody, man.
Yeah. You sounded like the dude there, Mr. B.
Oh, hey, and here's something I did want to mention, too. You know, since we've talked about Werewolf by Night, the Werewolf by Night podcast just wrapped up, you know, and kudos to those guys for getting through the entire run of Werewolf by Night. And then they did a couple of, you know, side episodes, too, I think, didn't they, with, like, you know, the crossover with Tomb of Dracula and stuff like that too. Yeah, I think they did, but they definitely completed the entire run. So good for those guys, man.
Yeah, kudos. Apparently their next project's going to be a music show where they're going to discuss music and stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll definitely give it a listen. So yeah, the Werewolf by Night podcast has wrapped up, and sad about that. Those guys definitely, we engage with them on Twitter every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And well yeah. done, you know. So congratulations to those guys, but it's also a little bit, you know, with a tear in our eyes that we bid farewell to them. But you know, the account's going to keep running on Twitter. We're going to keep interacting that way about Marvel related mm-hmm. stuff, and then we'll support yeah. them, you know, when their new endeavor launches, right, Billy? So excited mm-hmm. for them.
Yeah, nice guys. You know, definitely nice guys. So yeah, we got to support the old Bronze Age Marvel for sure.
definitely. Well, Mr. B, that's mm-hmm. all I have for Shop Talk. We'll get into some more interesting comic book discussion during our Recommendations of Ragador segment, which is up next. But first, mm-hmm. a word from, well, he's not a sponsor, but he's definitely, you know, associated with Into the Weird. We can't live without him these days, even though we wouldn't want him to show up at the office or at the recording studio anytime. And that is, of course, the Big D himself, Dormammu. So don't go away. We'll be back right after Dormammu introduces this week's recommendations.
Greetings, humans. Once again, it is I, Dormammu, seizing control of your airwaves, overtaking your podcast with my sultry tones. I see you're all about Halloween this month, watching horror movies. I'm about that too. Believe it or not, we have a lot of horror here in the Dark Dimension. For entertainment's sake. Of course, it's not in the form of movies. It's more realistic, if you get my drift. Still, I have my favorites too. John Carpenter, the man who did my biography, if you can call it that. A documentary about my life, so to speak. I'm, of course, referring to the classic Prince of Darkness here, inspired by yours truly. And of course, I'm very much looking forward to this year's trick-or-treaters making their way to the Dark Dimension, knocking at the door and being shocked by what I have to offer them. There better be one dressed as Dormammu, the Lord of the Dark Dimension. If there isn't, they will feel my unbridled wrath, and I'll send them screaming home to their mommies. What, did you think I would harm children? I've got one myself, you know, a little boy called Doyle. Too bad he's one of Strange's disciples, but we'll soon set that aright. Alright, without further preamble, here it is, the recommendations of Ragador. This month, they've actually come up with something worth my time. So see you on Halloween night, weirdos.
All right, we're back with the recommendations of Ragador. Mr. B, what do you have on the slate for us today?
Okay, so since we're talking about Spider-Man, I grabbed this, I don't know if you'd call it a trade. I guess you would. It's like a thinner trade paperback from, I think it's 1988 is when it came out. Yeah, I'm looking at the edition now, 1988. And it's just called The Sensational Spider-Man. And it has this really cool shot of Spider-Man, you know, as if the camera's on the ground looking upwards at him, and skyscrapers, and it's a purple background and lightning, and he's, you know, shooting a web, and it's really super cool cover, and it actually is a wraparound, and on the cover you get the four names of the four main players of the creators that are part of this trade, and it's Denny O'Neill, which, you know, rest in peace, but a great writer, you know, wrote Spider-Man for a bit too there, Frank Miller, Klaus Janson, and Tom Palmer, and what it encompasses is it has Amazing Spider-Man Annuals 14 and 15 in here, which covers a story with the Punisher and Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man, which is pretty crazy. But, you know, lots of fun and enjoyable, and yeah, some crazy good artwork. And then it has, like I said, a Spider-Man Annual 14, which was a Doctor Strange Spider-Man adventure, which really super cool. And then, you know, it's a little bit of Doctor Doom in there too, but that one's really crazy. I enjoy that a bit. And then in the back, just for, you know, maybe a little more, a few more pages of filler, you get a Spider-Man story from the Silver Age. I think it's from issue 8, where it was Lee Kirby and then Ditko inking Kirby. And we had Spider-Man when he met up with the Fantastic Four, like you mentioned earlier. Yeah. So a little synchronicity there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, we didn't plan that. Cool.
Nope.
Oh, I love it, Mr.
So,
B.
So yeah. Yeah, look for that. It's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a great recommendation. Always great. And of course, we love Spidey. I would love to talk more Spidey on Into the Weird, but obviously not all of his comics. I mean, they're suitably weird, but not... The in most cases it's not the extreme amount of weirdness we require. You know, so usually with Marvel team up, though, that's where we find the weird Spidey, because he teams up with some kooky characters sometimes, right, Mr. B? So and of course we'll eventually talk about the Defenders that feature Spidey in those pages. There's some great storylines where he was part of the team, some suitably weird stuff happening there. Okay, Mr. B, now, for me, this is a character I've been reading since the early 90s, and I'm going to recommend a fairly, I think, a new collection of his that came out, I think, earlier this year. It's from Dark Horse Comics, and this is Mike Allred's Madman. Now, why did I pick him? How is he related to the two issues we talked about? Well, I don't know. Do you know anything about the character of Madman from Dark Horse?
I've never read that character.
Yeah, it's a very interesting character. And of course, if you like Mike Allred's art, this is just jaw-droppingly fantastic. This is one of his first comic book characters, the character that cemented his fame as a penciler and also as a writer. You know, Mr. B, and this is, why did I pick this? Because he's related to the Frankenstein monster. Yes, believe it or not. The character of Madman is, of course, you know, called Frank Einstein. And actually... if you put that together, that's Frankenstein, right? But, you know, the two scientists who created him, because he was a normal guy involved in a car crash, and then he was dead, found by these two scientists who then cobbled him back together in a Frankenstein monster-esque way. And so they named him Frank Einstein because he had no memory of who he was before. But it was not because they wanted to pay homage to the Frankenstein monster. No, it was because their favorite singer was Frank Sinatra, and their favorite scientist was Albert Einstein. So Frank Einstein. But he's much a Frankenstein-like monster. He's undead. Well, he's a, you know, a patchwork creature. And, you know, he was revived. And then he decided to become a superhero because, you know, he has snippets of his past life. And one of the memories he has left over is of this superhero whom he used to love called Mr. Excitement. So he cobbled together a costume vaguely resembling Mr. Excitement. And then he became a superhero. And he's got superhuman reflexes and agility and elasticity. And he's also got some psychic powers. You know, when he touches someone, he can see where they've been and what they've done and see a bit of their past and their future and so forth. So, you know, he's in Snap City. You know, that's where he usually has adventures. And he's part of this team called the Atomics, who are filled with some kooky characters as well. Now, this collection that I'm recommending, Mr. B, collects most of the old stuff featuring the character of Madman. And it's specifically called the Madman Library Edition. Now, they put out some Hellboy Library Editions, you know, from before. And the Goon Library Editions. That's what Dark Horse is doing. They're very nice volumes. Now, this one I recently purchased. And it's oversized. And it's heavy. But it's not omnibus sized. But it's a little bit taller than an omnibus, though. But it's not as heavy. And then it collects... if I'm not mistaken, collects all the early Madman stuff. So it's got his first appearance in Creatures of the Id, and it's got Madman Adventures, the Madman Original Series 1-3, Madman Adventures 1-3, and then Madman Comics 1-10. So if you've never read Michael Allred's Madman, you got to pick this up. This is great. You know, this the art is just fantastic. The colors, cool. You know, look beautiful. And it's great for someone who wants to get into a very quirky character. And the stories are insane. You know, believe it's really into the weird type material. But it's not Marvel. But yeah, I would recommend this to people who like to be weirded out by their sequential art.
Sounds great.
Yeah, man. Our listeners should give that a try. It's a little bit pricey, but not omnibus style. I'd say you can pick it up for $50 or $60. And then you get like 600 pages. Or more of fantastic art by Allred. Yeah, so great collection. One of my favorites that I've picked up this year, if not the favorite even. And suitable for Halloween too, because there's lots of horror-centric tales in there. I mean, most of his villains are monsters or mad scientists. So there you go with your horror angle.
Perfect.
Yeah, connected to the Frankenstein monster there. Frank Einstein, madman. All right, that brings us to our Allies of Agamotto segment. I've got a Bronze Age superhero alter ego that I'm going to ascribe to one of our patrons on Patreon. So we'll do that. We'll get to that right after the break.
At first, I pushed the lever forward ever so slightly. And the laboratory grew faint around me. I stopped.
All right, for our Allies of Agamotto segment, I'd first off like to say thanks to the great power metal band Seven Kingdoms for quote-unquote sponsoring us and allowing us to use their fantastic song In the Walls as our intro and sometimes our outro. We really appreciate them supporting us, and we support them too by buying their albums or, you know, subscribing to their music, checking out their website. They've got a Facebook page as well, so follow them on Twitter. The great power metal band, Seven Kingdoms. And of course, I want to say thanks to our patrons over at Patreon. It's 5 months into our Patreon that we launched for Into the Weird. Billy and I are very grateful to the following people: Ryan Daly, Brian Hansen, Scott Rowland, Gary Arkell, Ed Moore Jr., Steve Cronin, Gore Tolton, and our newest patron, Spindrift Games. We've had some great interactions with all of these people on Twitter, and it's great to have this bunch of friends that are helping us out. Much appreciated, guys and gals. All right, so this time around, it is the turn of Mr. Gary Arkell, who's up for a superhero moniker that I have cobbled together for him. Gary recently appeared on The Long Box of Darkness. He was a great guest. He's a horror comic fan, but he also loves his superheroes. He was introduced to comics while he was bored watching baseball on TV, and a cousin brought some comics over to his grandma's place, and he got a batch of comics to read. They were mostly Marvels. Eventually, they were mostly DC, I think, in the beginning, and then eventually got into Marvel as well. And he's got a couple of favorite characters, but like I say, he's also a big fan of horror. That's why he talked Swamp Thing with me on Laud recently, and he is also a fan of many other things that I've tried to like draw out of him to find out more about what Gary, you know, likes and what he dislikes, so that I could use this to come up with this Bronze Age alter ego for him. And he's crazy about Bob Dylan, and he loves movies like the classic movies featuring Humphrey Bogart, The Maltese Falcon, Casablanca. So I've taken all of those things and sort of come up with something that also fits into Halloween, you know, that's coming soon for the month of October. And so this is horror themed, but not completely. It's also superhero themed. It's also got a little bit of the classic Dashiell Hammett flavor to it, if I can put it like that. So Gary, I hope you like what I've created here. Your superhero origin. The origin of Mr. Gary Arkell. Firmly set in the Marvel Universe, of course. All right, here we go. Our fright-filled tale of superhero genesis begins on the monster world of Nightmarium in Earth Dimension X-13-666, where a young monster lad named Gory, middle initial R, last name Kill, was staying over at his grandma's house. Well, house might not be the correct human term. It was, in fact, a crumbling old structure resembling a Gothic castle, perched high upon a cliff perpetually surrounded by storms and dazzling arcs of lightning, but you get the idea. Large, muscular, and shaggy, somewhat resembling a black-furred werewolf crossed with a yeti, after all he had some white stripes in there as well, but with an otherwise human-looking face resembling a famous hunchbacked monster actor called Humphrey Bogart, at least according to his parents, who bragged about it. Gory was an amiable and imaginative kid, prone to boredom. With nothing better to do than to watch the endless National Fear Bowl playoffs on TV with his meemaw, an aquatic deepling witch resembling a gill man, or maybe I should say gill woman, Gory was elated when his lycanthropic cousin turned up one night, sporting treasure from a recent reality-hopping trip to Earth Dimension 616. As Gory understood it, there was one night a year in the monster month of Shocktober when a rift would appear for a couple of hours on the outskirts of his hometown, Screamopolis. It was this rift that allowed the denizens of the monster dimension to enter a world populated with soft-bodied creatures his cousin called humans. Strangely, the humans there would all be dressed in costumes and masks that made them resemble folk from the monster realm, and they would walk from house to house begging for sweet treats they called candy. So naturally, the real monsters from Nightmarium found it ridiculously easy to enter and explore Earth 616 during this brief time, as no human ever gave the intruding tourists a second look, save to compliment them on their, quote, incredibly realistic costumes. Not wanting to stand out, the monsters mimicked human behavior, which seemed to consist of ringing as many doorbells and knocking on as many doors as possible, collecting sweet treasures that led to agonizing dental problems afterwards. On the night his cousin turned up waving candy, chocolates, and lollipops in his face, Gory's life was destined to change forever. Apparently, one of the humans whose door was knocked on had given something called comic books to the begging monster troop instead of sweets. These comic books fascinated Gory, and he persuaded his cousin to part with them. After that, the youngster spent months poring over these comic books, drinking in the culture of the strange human world, absorbing the adventures of the ones called superheroes, dreaming that he would one day be old enough to venture into the human world and to become a superhero himself. Life got in the way, however. After his parents were killed in a senseless act of violence during a gremlin uprising, Gory grew up to become a police officer, eventually making detective. Investigating a missing monster case one fateful Shocktober night led to a series of clues that forced him to enter the rift that appeared on the outskirts of Screamopolis. His investigation on Earth lasted longer than the allotted span of the rift's annual appearance, and he soon found himself trapped in the human world for an entire year. Hiding himself with a glamour learned from his witch grandmother that changed his features and reduced his monstrous size, Gory appeared no different than your average Humphrey Bogart-looking trench-coated human. Establishing himself as a private eye in the city of New York, Gory R. Kill soon became Gary R. Kell, a reputable human gumshoe. During his explorations of this strange new home of his, he soon discovered that lots of monsters had gone missing during their annual Halloween jaunts to Earth 616. Many of them had either wanted to live amongst the humans or had been discovered and killed by monster hunters while gorging themselves on candy and falling into diabetic comas that lasted well past Halloween, when monstrous appendages such as claws, tails, horns, fur, fangs, and tentacles became dead giveaways. Some, however, had merely gotten lost. As lost as Gory found himself at times. At first he was inspired by the colorful superheroes zooming or leaping or swinging overhead, but he soon became disillusioned when he realized that one of their favorite activities was, well, battling monsters. Gory then faced a dilemma. The longer he stayed in a superhero-infested world searching for his lost brethren, the more probable it became that he himself would be discovered, captured, and perhaps even destroyed. He was heading towards disaster, like a monstrous rolling stone, striding all along the watchtower that didn't exist, looking for answers that were blowing in the wind, but finding none, trapped in a hurricane of despair, knocking on heaven's door, pleading to be let in, receiving no reply. But then it hit him in a burst of inspiration. He didn't need a watchtower. He needed a beacon, a lighthouse that could serve as a true north to all monsters in need. And with that thought, a plan started to form. First, Gory purchased the land on which the rift appears every Halloween night. He did this with reward money he received from none other than Lady Diana, the Princess of Wales herself. During a daring escapade, Gory had knocked down a man who had stolen the princess's favorite fur hat when she was walking incognito in Manhattan. For this, she was eternally grateful and extremely generous. What she did not know, however, was that the luckless thief was actually a monster hunter, and the fur hat was actually a monster, who wanted nothing better than to live its quiet life on Earth as a hat on the head of one of the most beautiful women who had ever lived. Next, Gory constructed a magnificent club on the spot where the rift would appear, and dubbed it Gary's Café Monstreux. Within its music-filled rooms, amidst the smell of delicious cuisine wafting from its kitchens, with posters of the old Universal monster films dotting the walls, and the sweet tune of As Time Goes By emanating from a piano, it proved to be a place where monsters could finally feel safe when traveling to Earth, and would have a haven if they ever missed their ride back. Finally, Gory started taking cases in earnest, tracking down missing monsters, taking on S.H.I.E.L.D., AIM, Hydra, Gamma Base, and any other nefarious groups holding, studying, and dissecting his kin. This might seem daunting, but between his skill with glamours, his enormous size, his monstrous strength, and his high durability, he was easily the equal of creatures such as Xemnu, Sasquatch, the Wendigo, and yes, even the Hulk. This, needless to say, made him extremely effective at his job. His role as Monster Messiah did not stop him from defending Earth 616 from supervillains on occasion, however. Assisted by the vampiric seductress Carmilla Wonderly, aka Beastly O'Shaughnessy, his secretary, sidekick, and sometime love interest, he took down foes as varied and bizarre as the scarred technocrat Professor Purgatory, the alien mutant Doc Magnetar, the sinister silicon being Alphatron, Ulysses Bloodstone, the monster trafficker Ludwig von Stupf, and the seditious siren of folk rock known as the Tambourine Man. So let's raise our glasses as we sit here in the Café Monstreux and toast the success of Gary Arkell, the creature criminologist, the patron of peculiarity, the night breed Nimrod, the hope of Halloween, the Oscar Schindler of the odd. Let's drink to Gary Arkell, the super private eye now affectionately known by monsters and humans everywhere as the Gumshoe Gargantua. That's it, Gary, your Bronze Age superhero alter ego from Into the Weird. I hope you like it. I'll send you the script. If you want to make any changes, I can do so. Or you can make them yourself. All right, so that was a lot of fun. Now, I know this might be getting tiresome, listeners, but I just want to plug our Patreon again. We're over at www.patreon.com/IntoTheWeird, and there you can find our additional shows exclusive to our $5 and $10 patrons, which is Dragons and Jive, where we cover Luke Cage, Shang-Chi, Iron Fist, and the House of Licensed Ideas show, where we cover the rest of Marvel's licensed properties, particularly ROM, Space Knight, Micronauts, John Carter, Warlord of Mars, Godzilla, Planet of the Apes, Star Wars, etc. And then also, last but never least, our Radio Free Hyboria episodes, where we cover Conan, all the Robert E. Howard properties such as Kull, Bran McMorn, Red Sonja, and of course, Solomon Kane, eventually. So please support us there and you'll be able to access those shows. There's also the $1 tier if you feel like just supporting us and helping us out, and that would obviously go a long way into letting us produce better content and setting aside more time to devote to podcasting. We really appreciate you guys helping us with that. Thanks for that. And then if you want to send any feedback, you can do so at sinkintotheweird@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at IntoWeird and at Dark Longbox. Billy's at BillyDelicious. And we accept emails, DMs, voice messages. Anything's fine. We love to get a conversation going about Bronze Age Marvel and about comics in general. Please feel free to also give our other shows a look. We're busy with 4 podcasts at the moment, non-Patreon related stuff, of course. Our other podcasts are A World on Fire, an All-Star Squadron podcast, as well as Star Rocket Radio, an Infinity Inc. podcast. And then Billy is at Magazines and Monsters. That's his podcast and blog. And I'm on there frequently discussing horror movies, comic books, everything that we enjoy. So, we would also appreciate it if you give those a look. Well, Mr. B, that's the end of yet another Into the Weird. I'm off to actually prep for some work-related stuff that I've got going later on. But you're going to be still up. I'm sure you've still got a holiday, aren't you? Aren't you still on holiday?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nice.
Oh, so, yes.
You going to watch some horror movies, Mr. B?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm going to get something tuned in here soon.
Excellent. Excellent. But we'll be back with our horror special, which you can look for in and around Halloween, right, Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Just before Halloween, I'd say. We'll release it so that you have some time to watch it, to work up to the Halloween itself. And mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think we don't really have to tease this, but our listeners know what's coming. Every Halloween on Into the Weird, we cover some vampire tales. And we've done that mm-hmm. twice before. And now we're in our mm-hmm. third year of doing that. So look forward to that. And then after that, we'll commence with our regular Doctor Strange coverage again in the beginning of November.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, Mr. B, I'm out of here. We'll leave the listeners with a bit of a message. Stay weird, stay cool, stay freaky, and stay scary, because it's the season for that kind of thing, and then you should properly enjoy your October and your Halloween. And we'll be back to scare you some more with our next special.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, it's bye from me.
All right, stay weird, everybody.
Cheery out.